On the 3rd of January, the United States launched military strikes across Venezuela and took President Nicolas Maduro and his wife into U.S. custody.
So we are going to run the country until such time as we can do a safe, proper, and judicious transition. And it has to be judicious, because that's what we're all about.
Hello, everyone. Tiffany here on a special episode of the Deep Dive podcast. Stephen is away, so it'll just be me this week. U.S. President Donald Trump announced in a press conference that his government would, in the meantime, run Venezuela. A quick summary of why this is happening. Trump accused Maduro of supporting drug cartels, alleging that they're responsible for thousands of drug-related deaths in the U.S. Maduro now faces charges linked to narco-terrorism and possession of dangerous weapons. He has pleaded not guilty to all the charges. Well, not surprisingly, we are seeing a huge global reaction. Some leaders condemn the arrest as a violation of Venezuela's national sovereignty, while others welcome Maduro's removal. The Singapore government has expressed grave concerns, saying that it opposes actions contrary to international law, including foreign military intervention. So, what does this mean for the rest of the world, and what will it mean for us here in Singapore? To discuss this, we have Professor Joseph Liao, Dean of the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy.
Hi, everyone.
And Kevin Chen, Associate Research Fellow at the S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
Big news to start the year, the US seizing a sitting foreign leader. But it's not the first time many people are saying that the US has done this. It's previously taken Panama's former military leader. So, Joseph, what is it about Venezuela that is so shocking to everyone?
Well, the first thing we should ask ourselves is how shocking it actually should be, right? I mean, the fact of the matter is that this issue of Venezuela and the Trump administration's displeasure or discomfort with Venezuela has been articulated already for some time, for a number of months. Yeah, and in fact, an operation such as that, which was pulled off early this year, would have been undertaken only after, number one, quite an extensive period of planning. Number two, quite likely with inside support or at least intel as well. Yeah, so this, it made the headlines, obviously, but in truth, this is something that had been building up, right? And of course, Trump himself, when he articulated in the national security strategy, the Trump corollary to the Monroe Doctrine, the whole idea that the Western Hemisphere is basically America's turf. And what does it mean to be America's turf? It basically means that America will play a major role in defining the dynamics there. When things are not aligned with U.S. interests or interpreted as going against U.S. interests, the U.S. reserves the right to take action to deal with that. Yeah? So all this is the backdrop that we have to keep in mind when we think about how surprising this event was.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We've already heard Mr. Trump call it the Monroe Doctrine in an interview that he gave, I believe, on Air Force One. And frankly, it's pretty, I wouldn't say completely expected, but it's not entirely surprising that his government would choose to use military force in such a way. We've already seen, just over the past year, him striking the Iranian nuclear facilities. So this strike on Venezuela, it was, I think, telegraphed for several months now, but it's still quite shocking, I think, to international observers.
I think for me, what was shocking was not just the fact that, you know, they struck Venezuela, but the fact that he also said that the U.S. will run Venezuela until they are certain that there will be a, you know, proper transition to a new government. I mean, is that why it's currently not sitting very right with a lot of people who are observing this?
Well, first, again, Donald Trump saying something that is shocking is not really shocking, right? First and foremost, in this day and age. But having said that, I think what the president has done with that statement is really obfuscate further an already rather murky situation, right? The US purportedly, or the military purportedly, engaged in this military action at the behest of the judicial department, right? It was for reasons of dealing with a law and order issue, right? But subsequently, to say that we are now planning to, in some way, shape, or form, run the country, I mean, that is a totally different order of things entirely, yeah. And I think that is the thing that really raises eyebrows now, because it basically poses more questions than it answers, right? How is the US going to do it? Is it going to involve boots on the ground? If it does, where does Congress stand on this? How does Congress even feature in this entire episode? How long is this going to last? What is the reaction of the Venezuelan ground? I mean, there are a lot of people in exile that are celebrating it, as in the tendency of exiles when an autocratic leader is removed. But that's not to say that it will be therefore a smooth path to change the regime or restructure the regime. So all these beg to be answered.
You know, people are talking about is that confluence of all the different reasons. So firstly, you know, there was the accusation that there were all these like drug cartels, and it was really a wage against drugs. And then it was the idea that the election, that Maduro had wasn't legitimate, so he wasn't seen as a legitimate leader. But then at the press conference, it was also mentioned that there was this idea of, you know, Venezuela stealing oil interests. So was this military mission primarily a humanitarian effort to combat the drug trade, or would you say it's a strategic move to grab oil?
I think everything is involved in this whole dynamic, right? In this whole narrative, Trump had issues with the elections and Maduro himself, even from Trump 1.0. Yeah, so I think we shouldn't forget that. The drug issue is a drug issue. I think that is also very clear. But there's also a strategic imperative around this, right? I mean, was it a coincidence that the Chinese had a meeting with Maduro just a few hours before, and then Trump moved, or the US decided to move in spite of that? People are reading into it and saying that a very clear signal is being sent. I mean, there's one thing to talk about, to debate about whether or not this is Venezuela's oil or America's oil that was nationalized and taken from American interests. But then it's another thing to say, to think about, okay, look, this is Venezuela dealing with the Chinese, dealing with the Iranians, dealing with the Cubans in our backyard, right, in the Western Hemisphere, where we need to make very clear that we are in control of things. Yeah. So really, there are all sorts of dynamics at work here, I think.
I think there are a multitude of reasons why, especially publicly, why the Trump administration has stated why it wants to go in. But at the same time, there are a lot of, shall we say, counter-arguments as to why that might not have been such a sound idea. Let's look at narcotics, for example. This whole thing was initially framed as an anti-drug operation, right? Acting on drug trafficking charges that were laid against Mr. Maduro back in March 2020. But at the same time, does it really make sense if Mr. Trump freed former Honduran President Juan Orlando Hernandez just a few weeks ago, given that he'd already been convicted of smuggling cocaine into the US? He also pardoned and released several individuals related to drug trafficking, including Ross Ulbricht, who operated the dark website known as the Silk Road. And then if we look at oil, it's true, Venezuela is supposed to have, I think, the largest oil reserves in the world. But at the same time, a lot of this oil reserves, this oil is heavy sour crude, which is harder and more expensive to extract as compared to other kinds. One estimate, I think, said it would take up to $100 billion and about a decade of effort just to boost output to a somewhat profitable level. And with oil at below $60 per barrel now, that would probably take even longer. So it's not discounting those two reasons, but I think there were bigger strategic rationales at play here. I mean, look at Venezuela's geostrategic position. Friendly ties not just with China, with Russia, with Iran. Iran allegedly controls Venezuela's drone factories. There was some fear about it being used as a potential launch pad for a foreign strike on US soil. And of course, I mean, we could look at it in relation to the rest of the Western Hemisphere, you know, like killing the chicken to scare all the monkeys, right? As Mr. Trump remarked in an interview on board Air Force One, he described Cuba as ready to fall after losing Venezuela's support, that the political situation there is something we'll end up talking about. He also talked, you know, criticized Colombia, telling President Gustavo Petro to watch himself. This might just be the opening move in a broader series of actions.
Joseph, you brought in, you know, you brought up the idea of the China and, you know, even the Russia relationship over there with Venezuela. So what's going to happen right now that, you know, Maduro's taken? I mean, do you expect that China or even Russia will actually make a move?
Well, there will be howls of protest for sure, because, you know, contravention of international law, the usual stuff. Yeah. So such reactions will not be limited to small states. Larger states will say that as well. I think the Chinese have already said something. But whether anyone will do anything beyond that, I doubt it. I mean, what are you going to do? Pull together an international coalition to liberate Venezuela against the US, right? I don't think that's happening anytime soon. So I think it will be just another stark reminder for all of us, in as much as we are invested in the international rules-based order and as critical as rules are to the conduct of international affairs, these rules are not cast in stone in the sense that great powers, where it is a question of them pursuing their interests, they are very happy and unapologetic about using their power to ensure that their interests are advanced.
I'd like to expand on that as well, because a lot of people are saying that, you know, they are drawing parallels with the Russia's invasion of Ukraine and saying that the US is basically very hypocritical in its approach to the Ukraine war. They say something, you know, they basically stand on the side of Ukraine, but then in this case, they have no... they have no qualms with, you know, going in and taking a sitting foreign leader. So is that an accurate comparison, you think, when it comes to the US actions?
I mean, I think it's a distressingly accurate comparison, because I think one way I've heard it put is that this military operation that the US put on was kind of what the Russians actually hoped to do in Ukraine, you know, send in a special team to get President Zelensky out, decapitate the leadership in one fell swoop. But at the same time, I think it's also a bit different, because what Russia aimed to do there was invade the entirety of the country. The US, its goals are still murky at this point, but it only seems to have limited its objectives to extracting Mr. Maduro.
Help me to understand, though, was the seizure legal? Like, can you know, under Trump's powers as the American president and even under international law, can he, you know, order his team to go in and seize a sitting foreign leader?
My understanding is that for the US, if it's a, it's not a declaration of war, right? If it's a declaration of war, it involves Congress. This is a limited military action, which is within the remit of the presidential exercise of powers. Yeah, but at the same time, it's quite vague in the sense that where do you draw the line, right? Where you know whether things will escalate from there, right? There's an indictment against Maduro, right, from New York court some years back, yeah. So there was that legal, from the US perspective, there was that legal justification, I suppose. I think that's where the parallels are drawn with Manuel Noriega, right? Like I said earlier, Trump talking about running Venezuela, I think that really complicates matters as far as international law is concerned. But ultimately, this idea of a big power, you know, just on a whim, it appears, you know, intervening in a smaller power, I mean, just the very principle of it is something that is and has to be heavily contested, but at the same time, is the reality of this world.
Let's go into that a little bit more, because everyone is saying that there is a shift from the old world order. So what does this shift, you know, when it comes to foreign and defence policy, what does this shift mean, you know, for us here in Singapore as a very small state?
Well, just to go back a little bit to the last question, I think this would be a good segue. International law is quite restrictive about when it's legal to use force, except for narrow exceptions such as self-defence, or when authorized by the UN Security Council or the lawful government of the country in question. Legal observers looking at this saga have said that, you know, a criminal indictment alone is not enough to authorize military force to not just enter a foreign country, but effectively abduct its head of state. So, under international law, no, it doesn't look like a very legal action. But at the same time, how this will affect the international order, right? I think we're looking at one of the most serious blows to land on the international order, but at the same time, I'm not convinced that what remains of the order will, you know, it struck a fatal blow. It's just a serious one. There were commentators that so far that have cautioned that Mr. Trump's actions will give Chinese President Xi Jinping the green light to enact his ambitions on Taiwan. But personally, I think that's a bit premature. I think Mr. Xi's calculations don't hinge on developments like this. His diplomats could use it as ammunition to say that, now look, the Americans say one thing and do another. They expect us to follow the rules while they can break it at their own will.
What about here in Singapore? Why should we pay attention to something that's happening so far away?
So I think, number one, as a small country, and our leaders have repeated this many, many times, the fact of the matter is that for us, international law in international rules, the so-called rules-based order, however we want to define that, is quite critical, if not existential, for us. So it's important for us to make clear our stand on this issue, which I believe that our leaders have done. But at the same time, we need to balance that out with the reality of the global landscape, especially today, right? It is one where the dominant powers, the big powers, are not only in competition with each other, but I mean they're operating in ways to advance their own interests that fly in the face of this rules-based order. Yeah, and that's the reality of the so-called jungle that we are in. Right? Mm. And no amount of crying foul can wish that away. I mean, President Trump is not going to care about the global outrage. Yeah, that's another reality. So, So we need to balance this out in our own sort of framing of how we understand the situation. But having said that, I don't think we should jump to the conclusion, you know, as Kevin suggested earlier, that therefore the US, Chinas and Russias of the world are just going to go around and just sort of intervene or gobble up every small state that's on the map, right? I think that the connection between what's happening there and what's happening in our part of the region, I think is a rather simplistic one, because the geostrategic landscapes are fundamentally different. I think in as much as great powers will be unabashed about exercising those powers to advance their interests, I think we need to realise also that they do it first and foremost in relation to their interests, and what they perceive to be dynamics that are undermining or challenging them. I think this is a situation that we find in the US in terms of the reaction of the Trump administration. I'm not excusing it. Yeah, there are a lot of issues with regards to it, but at least insofar as trying to understand how the administration viewed the situation. I think we shouldn't lose sight of that.
Yeah, I agree with wholeheartedly with Professor Liao. I think it's important to note that, you know, we're under very different geopolitical circumstances as compared to the Western Hemisphere. If I were the government in, say, Cuba, in Panama, in Colombia, in Greenland, I would be quite worried right now. But even though the threats facing our region aren't as, you know, direct or as militarily violent as the ones facing that region, the lasting impact of this raid will likely be a reinforcement of the belief that might makes right on the international stage, and that's going to be quite damaging or harmful to us. This is not to say that such a belief that, you know, might makes right wasn't present prior to the raid. There's been talk about how the US doesn't practice what it preaches for decades now. Now, however, any sort of attempt to explain themselves as having some legitimate rationale, well, some moral rationale to take military action has kind of fallen to the wayside. If you listen to people like Stephen Miller talk and respond to interviews, they say that, well, America is a military power and we want to use that power.
So I guess the question on everyone's mind is, what will the next few months look like for Venezuela and also for the rest of the world? Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Kevin, for joining me on this Deep Dive podcast. Thank you for your time. We'll see you next week.